I want to recycle. I want to talk about the article I sent out earlier today. So I want to check first to see, if show of hands, this is not, I just need to know how much review I need to do. How many people have had a chance to read it? Just a handful. Fantastic. Gives me more to work with. So the title of the talk today is Winning Go and Letting Go of Control. And what I looked at was a very interesting news article that came out in the past week or so, because the first supercomputer, because Google's supercomputer was able to beat for the first time a master of the Japanese game of Go. And while it was 1997 that Garry Kasparov lost to IBM's Deep Blue, Go is a full order of magnitude more complex per move. If during a chess move there are 20 possibilities or so, for every Go move there are 200. And if you multiply that out by the number of turns in a game, it comes, as some people notice, to be more possibilities of moves than there are atoms in the universe. And that's a very humbling number, because it teaches us, first of all, the absolute exquisite nature of the human mind, and even more remarkable that the human mind could design a machine that is able, whatever thought is, that is able to think and beat at least one of the world's best players of that. It's remarkable. You know, we're so caught, I think, in the election cycle that we forget that these strange and troubling miracles are happening around us. And what this brought back for me in general was the question about machine intelligence and the role of the human being. And this is a discussion, a train of thought that I've been tracking for 13 years since the very end of a Seder meal in a small apartment in Jerusalem with an old Talmud professor and his family. He had a nephew who was already predicting the demise of the human species and that the machines would quickly take over. And this was news to me, and I resented it because I like to think I have a place on the planet, a role in the ecosphere. Now, in the intervening 13 years, our abilities at creating artificial intelligence grow and grow and grow. We have cars that can drive. The Google car had one fender bender, but it's driven 400,000 miles. There is nobody in here who's driven 400,000 miles and hasn't had at least that same fender bender, right? So the machines are beginning to do actions that we think of as human through all of our evolutionary history. And it's fascinating. What is a human being? What is our role in the world? And as I've thought about this over 13 years, I've begun to think that perhaps it's being a generalist. Machines are very good at concrete tasks. Go, driving a car. But we have yet to make a machine that can text a message to their annoying friend while driving down the road and looking in the rear view mirror to see if a police officer is watching them text while driving, which is against the law. We do multiple things at once, sometimes well, sometimes poorly, but we can master all sorts of areas and perform in the world. Maybe that is what's a human versus a machine mind. Except that we're beginning to see machines, IBM's work, that are able to achieve mastery in multiple levels. And so what I want to pitch to you is this idea that I presented in my article, and then I want to take it a little bit further and engage us. Because it occurs to me that when we look at some of our greatest geniuses in human history, talking about moments of breakthrough and enlightenment, whether it's Isaac Einstein with relativity, whether it's Michael Jordan talking about being in the zone, or artists, or even great masters of business. There is a period of distraction when they don't seem to be actively engaged in the problem, but they are engaged in the problem. And they come back to it having diverted this small section of our identity that we think of as ourselves, the I. And in that moment of coming back, they are bringing up this full human being, and all the parts of our mind flow. Leonardo da Vinci. I mean, there's so many great names we could come up with, people who were able to operate. Leonardo da Vinci, by the way, would sleep in front of a table with a copper tray and a marble in his hand resting on it so that he could enter into a particular set of brain wave frequencies. And he, as soon as he started to doze off, the marble would drop from his hand, land on the tray, make a tinkling sound, and wake him up. And in that way, he would keep himself operating in between the realms we normally have access to and those we don't. What I'm trying to say is that I think we are at a point where we all need to become Leonardo da Vinci's, and that it's not such a crazy thought. So much of our education has been designed to train us to be what the machines can be, to become an accountant, to become a doctor, to become in some way a specialist in a narrow field of knowledge which restricts us from engaging the deepest parts of ourselves in creative endeavors. Now, why do I bring all this to you? It's because I take very seriously this notion in the Torah that we are created B'Tselem Elohim, that we're created with the divine spark. And what can that mean? And partly, the reflection of the world around us begins to tell us what it cannot be or what it needs to become, because a spark of the divine is only one small bit. And if the machines and technology and society begin to show us that more is possible of the machines, it tells us that there must be some other role for the human being. And we better go for it, because we're at a fascinating moment of time. And so I want to ask you, how many of you have had these moments, experiences where you are in the flow, where solutions to problems come where they don't come from, where you have achieved results in your life with minimal effort? Come on, so tell us about it, Lindsay.
Hi.
Because you raise your hand. Okay. Huh?
A computer can't be creative in the way that a human mind can be. It can't be as innovative as a human can be, because it is in the box of limits that the creator made it.
So there's an interesting notion. Is there some way, whatever the box is and whether computers have it, there certainly is a human creativity which is able to produce certain types of novelty. Fantastic. What else? Any athletes in here? Okay. I want to know about a moment where you
This doesn't have anything to do with that, but robots can't flop. They can't fake injury or anything like that. They don't have the acting skills to be able to someone, for someone to touch them and for them to flail onto the floor.
So I think this is a very, very deep comment. Robots can't fake it. And I think about acting, and acting is the ability not just to take on another identity, which is a very high level of empathy, but it is the ability to sort of channel some deep part that connects us all one and another. Nabokov, one of the great Russian writers, once said that fiction was born not when a boy came running out of the woods yelling, "Wolf, wolf," and a great wolf chased behind him, But when a boy came running out of the woods yelling, "Wolf, wolf," and there was no wolf.
There was a short film I watched that it was about when soccer was taken over by clones, and so clones played instead of the real players. And like in the end, the players did risked the game when they shouldn't have to beat the clones because they did the unexpected, and the clones just couldn't do it, and they had no idea how to do it.
So, right, is it the ability to make dumb choices that actually are smart choices, right? That may be a human skill. I want to end with one final notion, which may be more useful for people in our busy lives, which came up for me when I was reading Joseph Telushkin's book, The Rebbe. And one line in that book really, really changed my life. And it was the Rebbe, Schneerson, had a notion of hatzlacha bizman, success with time. And what he meant by that was that you can master time in such a way that you can achieve more things than possible. And some of the most accomplished human beings in the world would approach the Rebbe and say, "Rebbe, I got too much on my plate. I can't do it. What should I stop doing?" One of those, Adine Steinsaltz, one of the greatest, maybe the only Gadol Dor, one of the only genius of the age in Jewish thinking, creator of the whole English Talmud, a remarkable human being, Adine Steinsaltz says, "I've got these crazy projects, three of them, and I cannot do them all, and I need help deciding what to let go." And the Rebbe looked at him and said, no, you need to pick up another project just as large," which is what the Rebbe did. And somehow that opened up for me. There's a way that we are all can be far more effective and fast because the human mind, when we let go of this consciousness, is capable of amazing things. I know personally for me, I feel I've been listening to that and trying to live that. And I'll tell you, this job, which is a big jump for me and stretch for me, demanded that to some degree. But this notion of hatzlacha and bizman, in an age where we're all so stressed and anxious and unable to connect with the deeper parts of ourselves, I think is a fantastic notion to carry with you as you go out. And on Shabbat, which is all about creating a time window, a frame, so that we can have moments of these human transcendence. So with that said, I will wish you just that, a Shabbat Shalom. And I will ask you again, maybe individually, maybe in a group, about your experiences with hatzlacha bizman, with success in time. Shabbat Shalom.